In my entire broadcast career, I've covered many stories, many, many stories, but one scares the living daylights out of me. It's not covering a story on an exorcism or a ghost story in a cemetery. It's a real story of people disappearing. In some cases, they are found dead. But in a lot of cases, they are just gone. In a moment, David Politis joins us. Missing 411 on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. David Politis back with us. He received his undergraduate and graduate degrees from the University of San Francisco. His professional background includes 20 years in law enforcement, senior executive positions in the technology sector as well. I want you to get up to the coasttocoastam.com website. He sent us a trailer of Missing 411, the movie, which they are working on. It's an amazing story that is in conjunction with his work on the Missing 411 books. One is called The Devil's in the Detail. The other is North America and Beyond. Missing 411 is the title of both books. Frightening. And I had the opportunity to meet David face-to-face this past weekend in Boulder, Colorado for our Beyond Belief television taping. We did two programs with him. Absolutely riveting. David, it was good to meet you.
George, it was great to finally meet you. And for the listeners out there, you're a real gentleman, and you're appreciated by many. Thank you.
Had fun doing that. I want to talk with you about so many of these cases, do a little review for you, for people who are just tuning in and they may not know who you are, but tell us a little bit about your effort to get the Missing 411 movie just in front of people. What are we doing here?
Well, what happened was originally started off just writing books. There was never any intention, belief, idea, anything about making a movie. And slowly, as time progressed on, we started to meet victims, hear their stories. And there was a common theme out there that nobody was listening to them. They were forgotten. Nobody was looking for their family members. They needed a voice out there. They wanted to get their stories back in front of the public. And many of them believe that something unusual, kidnapping, abduction, something really unusual happened to their family member, and they wanted help figuring it out. And part of that effort was us going out, and when they came at us and asked us to meet, even before the movie was an idea, I met with some of these people, and the stories are just, I mean, I've cried several times sitting in front of victims' families and listening. It's just a heart-wrenching, draining, sad story that I think if the public understood how many of these stories are out there, they'd be shook. And a lot of people, you know, unfortunately don't want to read a book, and I understand that. They like a visual medium. And in talking and working it out and asking what people wanted, overwhelmingly they wanted a movie documentary about the incident. And in the last 3 years, I probably had no less than 10 different documentary film crews come at me with ideas. But the bottom line on all of those is that you would have to give up a lot of control and allow them to take the stories and in their mind make it compatible with the big screen and essentially twist the story. But in reality, there's no twisting that needs to be done.
No,
they're bizarre enough on their face.
They really are. They are stranger than what Hollywood could probably come up with just by writing some kind of bizarre story.
And so about a year ago, started into conversations with some people, and it kept rolling, and eventually we put together a team of award-winning videographers, film experts, etc. And I was very lucky because my son came out of Miami University as a D1 hockey player. And he came out of their business school with a minor in film, and during the last year he'd been doing a lot of work in the film side. And he helped me get this group together, and they have done some phenomenal stuff. Namely, I won't say a lot about it, but we got an interview with President Obama appointee that said some really, really interesting things about the National Park Service and kind of their inner workings. And besides that, we got interviews with park rangers, retired park rangers, victims' families. We shot on site in national parks and forests. And we took the project to the point where it is today, and it was a planned, staged event to get us to where we are. And we knew we would get to this point, and we would have to get help to finish. We want to do some custom animation work with distances, heights, and things, and that is really expensive. And so we went to Kickstarter, and the team put together a trailer. There's also a trailer with you in it that we just put up today. And I can tell you that overwhelming response is positive. I honestly don't think I've heard one negative thing about what we put up, and the victims' families are really happy. So that's the biggest thing.
Now, how do they find you on Kickstarter, David?
Well, you could go to Kickstarter.com and just put in Missing 411 to find it. You can go to our website, canammissing.com.
Beautiful.
You can go to Facebook and put in Missing 411 the movie to find it. But Coast to Coast listeners have always been super, super supportive of what I've done. This is one of those rare times where I really ask you to go there, spread the word on social media, help us if you can, but get the word out that this truly is happening. It's not fictitious. We stick strictly to the facts, and I think the victims really would appreciate it as well.
Super. Well, let's hope we can do all we can to help you, David. This is a story that needs to be told. Beyond just your books, beyond belief, it needs to get out there in movie form. It's frightening. I mean, just when I was talking with executive producer Lisa Lyon last week about you, before Tom was telling me about the Beyond Belief show that we were going to do with you, this unbelievable case in Idaho pops up with this missing two-year-old little boy. Unbelievable.
And George, that is not only unbelievable, it fits exactly with another case I've written about in the book. But just to give everyone an overview, a two-year-old boy named Dior, D-E-O-R-R, Kunz, K-U-N-Z, Jr., on a Friday, July 10th, 2015, about 2 p.m., he's in Lehigh County, Idaho. Lehigh, Idaho.
That's right.
Near a city called Leodore. And they're at a reservoir, and they got grandma and grandpa there, and they got mom and dad, and they got their little boy. And mom and dad are going to go take a walk, and grandma and grandpa are watching the little boy. And I'll quote the grandma, "We turned our back, and seconds later, he vanished." And that was her words. He just vanished. And, you know, kids, I always say this when I'm talking to a group, kids always will walk away. That's just the way they are, but they're not going to get a long ways away.
No, you're going to see them eventually. If they're, you know, 40 feet out or 100 feet out, you're going to see them.
And, you know, you're going to yell for the kid. They're going to respond back. As we were talking yesterday, we're both parents, and, you know, the best parent, there's going to be a time where accidentally you take your eyes off your child for a few seconds, and in this incident, that's just what happened, and he disappeared. Now, near the campsite, there was a small creek, not a big one, and then on the where the creek came out of was a reservoir, and this reservoir is surrounded by big, steep mountains. And the sheriff went in with a team and divers, and they walked the creek shoulder to shoulder. They dove the creek. He said with 100% accuracy, the boy is not in the creek.
And he also said he has never seen anything like this ever in his career.
That's right.
Jeez.
And so the search is still ongoing to this day, and they have no leads. The canines haven't picked up a scent. Like you said, the sheriff is just dumbfounded about where this boy might be. And the parents and the grandparents have started to talk that maybe the child was abducted or kidnapped. And as I state in my books, this is a common way to go when all of a sudden you're faced with reality that the child is not there right now. Where are they?
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, in a high percentage of these exact cases, the child is found in one or two places. They are going to be found in the water, or they're going to be found high up in altitude in an area that I can guarantee where they're not going right now.
And they're going to be found dead.
That's right. And unfortunately, that is the reality of the profile that we've established. And I can tell you that there isn't a search and rescue crew, 95 or 99% of them, that have ever heard of what I'm telling you right now, because they work off a profile that, say, 90%, 95% of the time, a boy of this size is going to walk downhill, take the path of least resistance. But there was a case, and there's several, but I'll talk of just one. Now, this incident with Dior happened July 10th. The incident I'm going to tell you about happened July 13th, but in 1957, in the Eastern Sierra, and it's in a little area called Mono Village. And it's outside of Bridgeport. It's on the eastern side of the Sierra, just east of Hoover Wilderness, just outside the borders of Yosemite National Park.
Okay.
A family goes there camping. There's two lakes in a small valley with super steep sides to the valley, and it's a box valley where there's one way in and one way out, just like Dior's incident. Well, they searched. Well, what happened was is husband and wife step out of the camper. They see their son. He's about 100 yards from the camper. They're looking at him. They go back in the camper for seconds. They come back out. He's not there. And they search. They call the sheriff. Within days, they're convinced, and they say this, that their boy is kidnapped. They said there's no way he could have gotten out of this valley. The sheriff put up roadblocks on all the highways. They were searching cars. They were convinced this kid got kidnapped. Well, on July 16th, they bring in the Marines from a high-altitude training center that they have in the Sierras, and they explain to them where these boys, where the search has been at, where the boy is not at, and now they have to exhaust every other opportunity. And I actually commend the Sheriff's Department in this area, Mono County, for doing what they did, because nobody would even think to do it because it's so ridiculous. So the Marines start searching, and right near where the boy disappeared, there's a switchback trail going right up the side of this super steep granite-laden mountain with no foliage on it. It's just a switchback going up a 1,500, 1,800 feet. And the Marines start going up it. And they get to the top, and they go down the other side, and they said, well, there's nothing here, but we're going to keep going up the other side.
Okay.
They go up 3,000 feet, and a sergeant named O'Brien steps around behind a large boulder, and he sees David Scott, 2 years old, 3,000 feet above the valley, naked, except for one sock, face down on the floor, dead. Now, the sergeant was asked by a group of press people if there were any visible injuries to his body, and he stated at the time that he wasn't an expert, and he can't make an opinion like that. But every survival person I know of that's read that story has said there is no way a 2-year-old is going to make it up the side of that mountain.
No, it's impossible. It's impossible for them to do it on their own. It's impossible.
And the other part about that story is that as you're going up the switchback of these trails, everybody from the valley could see you as you're going up, and you could turn around and see below. So the idea that no one saw this boy or even was somebody else going up the side of that mountain seems pretty ludicrous.
And he only had one sock on.
That was it. And they never found his clothing.
Do we know if the kid was ever abused?
You know, in the articles that I researched for that, there was never any indication of abuse. There was never any indication that the sheriff pointed fingers at the parents. The parents were grief-stricken. There was a lot of support. And in subsequent articles after that, the unusual thing was I never could find a report on an autopsy or coroner's statement about what the cause of death was or how the boy died.
And what's so frightening, too, David, in all these cases, in some cases, somebody who is in line with other people as they walk through the forests or the parks, the last person seems to be the one who gets it all the time.
And, you know, that's something that it took us a while to figure out. And there's an individual named Roger Marsh who works for MUFON who wrote an article about that specific fact that I wrote about in one of my books. And you would think if you're kind of that knee-jerk person, oh, you know, that just happens, blah, blah, blah. but it happens more frequently than you realize. And June 5th of this year, a young man, 20 years old, was in Chilliwack, British Columbia, and he was hiking with a group of friends up to a reservoir, and they were all together. And what is common in these is that the group will say, "We somehow got separated." They don't say that somebody went somewhere. Or they would say that this friend of theirs, his last name was Sagu, was a little bit ahead of him. But then they said all of a sudden he was gone, and we don't quite understand how it happened, but he wasn't there. And they immediately called search and rescue. Chilliwack search and rescue responded. RCMP responded. And there was a big search. And 3 days later, they brought a helicopter in. And as the helicopter's flying into the area, not even flying on a specific path to look for him yet, they're in another part of the park. And they're in an area that has a boulder field. And if you look online, Chilliwack, British Columbia, missing man found, you're going to see a picture of a boulder field that isn't very steep, but it's a big boulder field. And in the middle of the boulder field, they find this guy dead. And many, many times, these victims are found in the middle or around boulders. And I'll read you a quote of what the search and rescue people said.
Sure, go ahead.
They said, "It's just difficult to get lost in this area. It's such a well-marked, well-worn trail with lots of hikers on it, so it's very strange that nobody had seen this individual. Then on where the body was found, it was very, very strange and difficult to explain why he ended up where he did," said Fraser, adding that the boulder field is quite a bit above elevation of the lake and a fair distance from the trail. And when you look at the interview with the search and rescue guy, he is absolutely perplexed.
That's where I say, David, this is so mind-boggling, frightening. It just almost defies logic. I mean, originally when I started doing some research into your work, I thought, okay, there's a serial killer hitting everybody in the parks. I can't rule that out. It may happen in some cases, but there's too many other weird cases here. I mean, we'll get into some of these cases where a body was found 4 years later with the clothes next to him, I guess, next to the body. And the clothes, if it was out there for 4 years, look brand new, right?
Right.
It's just shocking.
No, it's and I should say that in all of these cases, there's nobody that's going to come out and say, "Oh yeah, this is pretty normal stuff." But when you read the stories and how consistent the same storyline is, time after time after time, you start to see this word coincidence so many times that almost anyone who's a survival expert says there's too many coincidences here.
David, stick with us. We're going to take this quick break. We're going to come back with David Politis, his books, Missing 411, a couple of them, The Devil's in Detail, North America and Beyond. But get up to our coasttocoastam.com website and look at the trailer of Missing 411, the movie. We'll be back. Well, I'm getting some amazing emails from people who are starting to connect with each other on ParanormalDate.com. If you haven't signed up yet, it is free to sign up. Simply go to the website, ParanormalDate.com, and have a great time. And welcome back to Coast, David Politis with us. We're going to go into some of these other cases. But, David, before we do that, can we outline some of the possibilities with these missing people? They're gone, or those that show up dead. Let's outline what you've looked at in Missing 411.
Well, one of the things that I get from people who haven't read the book is that, just like you said earlier, maybe there's a serial killer on the trails,
yeah.
And you know, it's happened before, and maybe it's happening now. But after you get into the minutiae, the data, you realize that we've mapped 52 clusters of missing people in North America, all matching the same profile point that you'll learn about. And of those clusters, the biggest cluster in the world is Yosemite National Park. Part of people's thinking is that, well, maybe it's an animal attack. And that's a natural place where we'd all go. Every case in the books has been vetted for that, meaning that search and rescue people have eliminated that possibility. Trackers that come in, they would see drag marks, they would see blood, they would see hair. People in the area that were hiking with you would hear screams and yells. There's never anything like that. There's no scene, there's no blood, there's no hair, there's nothing like that. So that's been eliminated. If you were going to take an adult person in the middle of nowhere and drag them away or carry them, that's a very, very hard thing to do. And you're not going to carry them very far. And when canines come in, they're going to still be able to track your scent. And trackers are going to be able to see you walking out of that scene. So a serial killer in the woods in 52 places in the U.S., at the frequency that this is happening, that really doesn't hold any water. Animal attacks doesn't hold any water. So those are the two primary things I hear about on a regular basis. Third thing is voluntary disappearance. If the person has a mental illness, we won't work that case. If there's any indication of a voluntary disappearance, we'll step away. So suicide, just trying to drop out of society, which people can if they want to,
Yeah. No,
it won't fit into what we're doing.
Right. And it doesn't happen much with a little two-year-old.
I don't think so, George.
No.
And so those are the big primary ones that search and rescue look at all the time. Now, on the weirdness factor, I mean, I've been doing this for almost 6 years now, so I've heard everything in the world. And most of the stuff I don't know much about, and people have written me thesis-length emails explaining why they are passionate about why they think the way they do. And I never discount anything. I always will read it. I'll say, that's interesting, but if there's something on its face that doesn't make sense, I'll throw that in. One of the things that somebody brought up just the other day was, you know, there's stories about these giant birds that sometimes come into an area. Mm-hmm. I mean, really giant, like prehistoric birds.
Thunderbirds.
Yeah. And there's a possibility maybe they would pick up a small child and carry him away. And the issue I have with only that one is that if the child is found, I think there would be evidence of talon grab.
Yes.
Or
they would have pecked him to death.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And none of that has ever come across anything I've seen.
But these weird stories, these weird possibilities, may be the best possibility. Stories of UFOs, Bigfoot stories. I mean, all of them, you can't discount any of them, David, can you?
And as I tell everybody in front of every conference I've ever been at, we are the most open-minded people you'll meet. And I'm probably a mile wide and an inch deep. I don't know a lot about many big things, but I know a lot about a little. Just because listeners and experts in different fields have read the books and they've sent me their thoughts. Some of them are, I don't know, and others are, well, maybe. And I've never put a stamp on anything yet. And the reason for that is that I believe as a researcher, you have one opportunity to get it right. And if I make a gigantic claim and later it turns out I'm 100% wrong, well, my credibility's kind of lost. And I have to look in the face of victims' families, and if they see that I'm behind some story that just is bizarre and makes no sense to them, it's hard to meet them, look at them, and have and hold integrity and credibility.
Tell us the case of Kenny Veach, who was looking at a strange cave that he found in Nevada.
Well, I'll tell you what, that case is one of the most unusual because there's actually a YouTube of Kenny going to a cave, looking in it, and trying to determine what he saw and what happened to him. And this is in an area where there aren't a lot of disappearances that I've written about. This is in an area in the Sheep Mountains in Nevada. But from where he disappeared, if you look out the valley, there is a story that I did in CBS Las Vegas on their news channel about a boy who disappeared within eyeshot of where Kenny Veach disappeared. Kenny was 47 years old, disappeared November 10th, 2014. And he liked to put up YouTube videos, and they were good. And I thought they were really interesting because he'd take you into a desert landscape and talk about it, and actually learned a lot. And one of these times, he went into this area, and he came out, and what he said was, "When I went into this cave, it made my whole body vibrate." And he said, "It's the strangest cave I've ever experienced." And he got out of there. He was alone.
It scared him, didn't it?
Scared him bad. And again, if you go online, search his name, V-E-A-C-H, Kenny, you'll find the video. And he explained that this cave is kind of shaped like a big Amazon Mary. And he left, and he thought about it for a few weeks, and he came back, and he was carrying a gun, and he said, "I'm going to try to find this cave." Well, during that effort to find the cave, he disappeared. And near one cave's entrance, they found his cell phone outside the cave. Now, to a lot of people, that might not mean a lot. To me, it does, because the victims that disappear 99% of the time never disappear with their cell phone, a GPS device, or a firearm. Now, they found this phone in an area where they weren't sure if that was the cave he was talking about or not. They did send a remote viewer camera down into the cave, and they said he wasn't inside. But the idea about that it made him shake, vibrate, and it gave him an uncomfortable feeling so much so that he left is intriguing to me. And when you listen to him, you could hear that the guy was scared.
And he's just gone.
And there was a big search. They searched every cave in that area. It was weird.
And I wonder what this strange vibration he felt when he was in that cave the first time.
You know, the only thing I could think of is sometimes, I could think of a couple times in my life where I have been seriously afraid for my life. And I actually started to shake. So I don't know.
Yeah, could have been his nerves.
Could have been nerves, could have been something else. I don't know.
When people are lost and then they're found later, you write that that spot, there were 74 different times that people, that a location was checked. They couldn't find anybody. They came back. They found them there. 74 times. That's amazing.
Now, again, that's one of those things that I mean, I'm a slow learner, but I'll walk that path for a while until if something finally hits me in the head and says, "Dave, wake up." But I wrote a couple books. And I included just the stories of what search and rescue said, what law enforcement said, and I kept saying those things. They said, well, and the victim was found in an area that had been searched multiple times. The victim was found on a trail that was used by search and rescue people every day when we walked in and out. Now, I say this too, and I think it's important to be said, is that I am not pointing a finger at search and rescue and law enforcement and saying they did an inferior job and they missed that person. Because I don't think that that person was there when they were looking.
That's a good point.
Especially the times where they say that they were walking that trail every day and they never found him. The 10th day they walked the trail out in this one case, and a tree is laying down across the trail, and this little boy is laying deceased on top of the tree.
He had to have been put there.
You know, first of all, the coincidence of a tree blocking the trail, almost like telling the searchers, hey, you're not going to get past this point because you're not going to miss this.
Right. And here he is. Whatever it is, it's obviously pretty darn evil, David.
I have no doubt with that. We all have a hard spot for kids, and, you know, what evilness is there in a two-year-old kid? Boy, girl, or whatever.
I mean, have they concluded with all of these cases where a body is found that they were murdered, or do they even know how they died?
Well, there is a real interesting point. Earlier this year, I was going to Rhode Island to watch my son play a playoff hockey game, and a medical examiner that I'd been communicating with from the East Coast, from a very, very large jurisdiction, had contacted me earlier in the year, said that she had read the books, and said, we got to talk, we got to meet. So we met in Rhode Island. And she said, Dave, you are into something here that medical examiners that do a lot of cases know what's going on. They know this is occurring, they don't know why it's occurring, and they can't explain it. And part of these cases, George, that I profiled in the book, a large percentage of those incidents, the coroners can't determine the cause of death.
That's amazing. All by itself.
Yeah. I mean, jeez. Normally in society, especially when I was a policeman, I've never heard of that.
No. Eventually, they always find out how the person died.
Now, in my conversations with this coroner, they stated that in the old days, there was a lot of political pressure to clear a case and offer an explanation to the community so that there would be acceptance. And as time is going on, they stated that there still is that pressure, whether it's subliminal or overt in certain places, but how strong that medical examiner is to stand up and say, hey, I'm not an idiot, but I can't figure it out, and say that straight up, or do they say, the person died of hypothermia, which is one of those kind of murky things that there are some things with the stomach and marks that they can find, but sometimes they really can't. And so a lot of times on those older cases, I'll read, well, the person or the child died of hypothermia. I read that all the time in old cases. Nowadays, I'm reading more and more where they can't determine the cause of death, even of the adults.
What percent of the people who have disappeared, and whether they are, you know, end up dead or not, but what percent of them... Well, let me rephrase that. Of the amount of people that disappear, what percent are found dead?
So these are the ones that fit this profile that we've established. And we're not talking about everybody who disappears in the woods. That's just these unique disappearances. We've documented about 1,500 right now, 1,600. I would say that probably 60 to 75% are deceased. And those...
They find the body.
I should say deceased, or you don't find them.
Or you don't. Yeah, here's my question. Of let's say, 100 people that this has happened to, how many of them are found dead in most cases?
I'd say that was a small percentage in my books. I would say probably no more than 20%.
And so the 80% are gone. They can't find them.
But that's not to say they're ever going to be found, because, I mean, there's cases that you and I talk about where people are found 4 or 5 years later, and the strangeness factor doesn't leave. The finding of the remains even offers more ambiguity right to the entire situation. But in those cases where somebody is found, there isn't always answers either, because the high percentage of those that are found... This is another factor and a profile point, is that these are people that have severe disability, dementia, autism, a speaking impediment where they can't communicate, et cetera. And those people come back, and a high percentage of time, they come back alive, but they can't tell you what happened.
So you do have a percentage of people who come back alive. What is generally the time frame that they have been missing?
That's a big variable, and they've had some young boys, say 7 to 10, come back after 8 or 9 days, and searchers are just completely dumbfounded that the person could have lived that amount of time in the area they were at. And
are they malnutritioned? I mean, are they dehydrated?
Many of the times, they're in an area where there's a lot of mosquitoes, and the physician will make a comment like, wow, no mosquito bites, and the person doesn't have a sunburn, but they don't have a lot of clothing on. They've lost almost all their clothing. There's a couple of, there's more than that. There's probably 10 cases out of Canada that are exactly that profile, where somebody was smart enough to write it down in the report that this doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make any sense. In a lot of cases, the clothes seems to be taken.
The clothes or the shoes or both, and the majority of the time, they're never found. Sometimes the weirdness factor goes up. They're found folded on a rock or a boulder. Sometimes the shoes, I would say a large percentage of the time, the shoes are never found. Other times, the shoes are found in areas that don't make any sense. There's a case, you just briefly touched on it before the break, involving Jared Atadero in northern Colorado. He disappeared in October of 99, a three-year-old boy. His family owned a resort up the Poudre River, about 50 miles west of Fort Collins. Beautiful area. And the family was hosting a singles network of people that came in for the weekend. And Jared has a sister named Jocelyn that's a couple years older than him. And this group was going to go down the road not too far and visit a fish hatchery. And so they asked Alan, the dad, if they could take the kids up to the fish hatchery. And the kids wanted to go, and they thought it'd be fun. And so finally the dad said, okay, you know, have fun. See you in a little bit. Well, somehow or another, something very strange happened. And this single group decided, after going to the fish hatchery, that they were going to go 20 miles further west into the wilderness and start hiking with these kids on a trail without even telling the parents. And this is part of the story in Colorado that is not being told to the public. And so they're walking the trail, and Jared, at 3 years old, gets ahead of the group that's watching him, out of sight. And he goes down the trail, and he walks up to two fishermen that are standing on the creek bank, and Jared's banging a stick in the water, and he asks the fishermen if there's any bear in the area. And the fishermen said, no, there's no bear here. And they said, stop knocking the stick in the water.
he's scaring away the fish.
Right. But George, this boy is probably a mile and a half into the Comanche Peak wilderness at this point. There's no adult around, and these guys let this kid just walk away.
Yeah, that was foolish on their part. They should have, you know, said, you know, we're your parents, and kept him and called for help or something.
Yeah, sit down. You're not going anywhere. Just wait here for your parents or whatever. But he walks away. He was never seen alive again. And there was a huge search. They brought in a helicopter from the armed forces. That crashed. And one of the things I write about in my book is that there are, I think there's six air-related crashes to the searches I've described in my books.
Astronomically high.
Very high. And so that aerial association I thought was really strange. But anyhow, the Larimer County Sheriff's Office did the search for Jared, even though it was in federal jurisdiction. He was on a place called the Big South Trail. And Alan and his brother and his family, they were there every day. And search and rescue wasn't finding anything.
Let's pick it up right from there, David. We'll come back, talk more about these cases. Truly bizarre cases.